You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 8 May, we've got Bank of England rate decision this afternoon, expected a 0.25% cut to 4.25%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Muyaha, Palantir Technologies, good results, raised guidance, everything lovely. And then the stock down 10%. Tasmin Somedine from Old Mutual Private Wealth. Estee Lauder down over 80% in the last couple of years. What's gone wrong? Is there opportunity? And then Michael Lentz from Transbridge, a digital bridging finance option for home buyers and estate agents. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, US rates steady. Powell says Fed won't be rushed. Officials not in a hurry to adjust interest rates as tariffs could lead to higher inflation and unemployment. Business Day, funding for Anglo's 70 billion rand coal deal on hold. The fire at their mine in Australia has created uncertainty, says Peabody Energy, who was the buyer. Morning markets, US is green, S&P and NASDAQ up 0.4%. East also green, Sydney up 0.33%, Tokyo 0.25% up, Hong Kong 1.25% and Tencent just over 2.2% higher. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures, $3,406 an ounce. Brent is the red at $61.54. Platinum, $988. Palladium, $977. The rand is $18.21. Bitcoin, $98,800. And top 40 opening call, green open, 720 points, or around 0.85% higher.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Jimmy Muyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. Palantir, their first quarter FY25 results. A good set of numbers. Revenue was up 39%, which was a beat. Non-GAAP EPS was in line. They raised guidance for the full year. They raised their operating margin guidance by a couple of points as well. All in all, not a bad set of numbers. The stock then promptly fell some 12% the next day. I suppose the question is, what is the market not liking, or was there something that we're totally missing here?
Yeah, morning, Simon. The stock was quite an interesting, or the update rather, was quite an interesting update. It was a very positive update by all accounts. And as you mentioned, those metrics all seemingly a lot to like around the business. And when you look at the business, there is very little not to like about the business. For those that don't know a bit about the business, they are in the AI space, and where NVIDIA makes the chips, these guys would then effectively make the AI platforms that these chips operate on, or that these AI softwares then run on. So they're in the software space, in the platform development space, specifically focused on artificial intelligence. Now, the numbers were great, the prospects were great, and I think the only glaring concern, other than slight margin pressure, is the elephant in the room that no one's really looking to talk about. Analysts are starting to pick up on it, and sentiment is starting to pick up on it, and that's why the share price was down, and that is valuations.
Yeah.
You're looking at a company that is trading at more than 200 times PE ratio. You're looking at a company that closed in the region of around 120 odd dollars a share, whereas the analyst calls and the price targets have been revised down to around $96. So it's trading well above expectations at the moment. The valuations on this are concerning, and I think that's where the main concern comes in from a company perspective. Markets have been looking at all of these stories, and you look at this, any other example where this has been the case. You look at NVIDIA as an example. They've got that huge order book. They've got those huge projections. And when they drop those positive results that beat estimates, the market doesn't move that much more. When you're dealing with markets that are highly overvalued, or stocks rather that are highly overvalued, The concern there is, of course, the capital that went into those companies can come out just as quickly if something goes wrong in the fundamental space. Now, with everything up in the air, from a tariff perspective, from a performance perspective, the expectations around recessions and those sorts of things are still out there, even though they are as minimal as they are at the moment. But when you're dealing with companies that are overvalued, they are going to feel it the most. Prime example of this was Tesla. For quite some time, the Tesla stock traded significantly above its ICE equivalent companies, to the extent where at some point it was valued at more than the top 10 combustion engine companies combined. And now the share price since the start of this year has come down by more than 50%. So when looking at the earnings that the companies are going to be able to put out going forward, investors, analysts, everybody's concerned to say, with the uncertainty that's out there and the fact that your earnings don't really line up with what we're paying on a price side of things, can we really continue to justify your overvaluation? And I think that's what the market is pricing in here. That's what has the market concerned. It's not that the numbers were poor. It's not that the expectations were poor. It is that you can't keep sustaining high valuations.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, EV sales 82 times, but here's the really fun figure. 1 year price return, 416%. So yeah, the stock collapsed. But to be clear, if you bought a year ago, that little 10% sell-off on Tuesday is of no concern to you whatsoever. We'll leave it there. That's Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you own this high-flying stock? And to be clear, it is high-flying. And as Jimmy says, valuations, well, they are rich at this point. Have your vote. Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Tasneem Samuddin from Old Mutual Private Wealth. Tasneem, appreciate the time. Estee Lauder was certainly one of the sort of post-pandemic darling stocks. We were all going out again. Their brands were doing incredibly well, but it's lost favor. It's been, I mean, since the highs of late December 2021, down over 80%. What's ailing the company?
Good morning, Simon, and thank you for having me. Yes, Estee Lauder, it's a sad story and really a cautionary tale for investors, particularly quality investors, because it's just been a series of unfortunate events. But COVID was really the catalyst. It just took the market a while to calibrate, but COVID was the catalyst because it exposed vulnerabilities in the Estee Lauder business. That stood out very clearly during COVID was the reliance on travel retail as a distribution channel. So, you know, travel retail, stores in airports, sales made on flights, that accounted for nearly a quarter of Estee Lauder sales leading into the COVID period. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the market gave them the benefit of the doubt because we expected a recovery to happen. So we didn't see really a sell-off in Estee Lauder in 2021. But another point that stood out was just China. China was so large and so important for Estee Lauder. Going into 2021, China was about 36% of Estee Lauder sales. Mm-hmm. So just completely overexposed to the Chinese consumer. And so when we didn't have a recovery in travel retail and we didn't have a recovery in China, that severely impacted Estee Lauder's ability to capitalize on the growth of the beauty market that happened in the US and Europe and Japan. They missed the growth markets completely in that post-COVID period when fragrance, particularly in the Middle East, where Estee Lauder was underexposed. So it just exposed where the Estee Lauder business model was particularly weak. And then from that point on, it's just been, on the management itself, it's just been a number of errors that they've also made in trying to recover the business, which we can also unpack a bit later.
I was going to follow up with that because, I mean, I appreciate they had a strategy. Travel, sure. I mean, no problem with that. China, no problem with that. But, I mean, in researching for this interview, I was doing some digging. There's lots of talk around, and there's been restructuring charges been going through, attempts at restructuring. You're suggesting that management hasn't managed that process well at all.
No, they haven't. So what they then tried to do in realizing that, you know, China and travel retail was going to take a bit longer. So in 2021, when we were expecting this recovery in the Chinese consumer, I mean, that was the consensus call. You know, China was going to recover. They were going to rebound strongly. Mm. Estee Lauder doubled up and they restocked China and their travel retail network. When that didn't happen in 2022, they then had to discount. severely. That impacted the gross margins. And for a luxury brand, you know, that is your worst nightmare. That is something we try very hard to avoid. So that was the first point that I'd say. That was, management should not have overstocked as aggressively. They should have tried to diversify at that point already, which is what their peers were doing. Their peers were going out into the US, out into Europe, out into Japan and the Middle East to compensate for China. But Estee Lauder, they doubled up on the Chinese market. So that was the first, I guess, one that you could say that was a management action. And the second one was that in 2022, you know, amidst all of this happening, they announced that acquisition of Tom Ford. And to do acquisition for Tom Ford, and to do that acquisition, they took on debt. And they took on that debt at a time when global interest rates were increasing and at a time where the operational cash flow was suffering because of what was happening in the Chinese market. And in 2023, their credit rating then came under review. And that's when investors got spooked. You know, because now the credit rating providers are putting up a flag and saying, well, Estee Lauder is not the quality company that they were in the past. And that really catalyzed what happened next, which was management was changed. So we had a slew of executive changes announced. We have a new CFO. We have a new incoming CEO. The chairman of the board retired. We have a new chairman now. So it started off with, you know, things they couldn't control. But then what they could control, they took the wrong actions. And that's really resulted in the position that they're in now, where there's very little credibility in management. One, because the management team that got them in this position has now left, and we're looking to a new management team to kind of turn the ship around. But there's no credibility in the new management yet. You know, it's a wait and see story. So that's where we sit with Estee Lauder today.
I take your point. I don't know much about the brands, but I recognize some of them. I mean, Estee Lauder itself, Clinique, MAC, Bobby Brown, you mentioned Tom Ford, although that was perhaps a poor acquisition. But I take your point. This is a case of, this was a quality stock. 5 years ago, if we'd had the conversation, we would have talked around quality. They've damaged that moniker that they had. We now need them to kind of reprove while we sit in the sidelines and let the new management team sort of re-get that quality label back.
Absolutely. So the problem is not with the brands. As you mentioned, Clinique, Estee Lauder itself, you know, The Ordinary, MAC in makeup, those are still good brands. Those are still brands that's respected by consumers. So the issue was really with management actions. It was them not being in the correct stores, in the correct distribution channels for consumers to actually purchase them. They didn't have a strong e-commerce position during the COVID period. So L'Oreal really capitalized because they had a strong e-commerce network. Estee Lauder then very late to the party, you know, started doing collaborations with Amazon in order to get some e-commerce presence. Those are the kinds of things you can say that's a management team problem. So it's not brands, and they've fallen out of what we would consider quality. Unfortunately, it is a wait and see, but it is really the credibility of the management team that will result in a re-rating of the valuation. Because I think the valuation will remain depressed for as long as the management team lacks that credibility. They have now a new strategy, this beauty reimagined. But really, we're going to have to see results before we are able to build an investment case around, you know, the Estee Lauder story going forward.
Yeah, they've tarnished it. They need to. The new management needs to fix it. We leave it there. It's Tasmin Samadeen, Old Mutual Private Wealth. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm training now with Michael Lenz, CEO of Transbridge. Michael, appreciate the early morning time. I suppose let's kick off with some basics. In the property market, what is bridging funding and what's its importance to, I suppose, both sides, which is, I mean, the realtors and potentially buyers or sellers?
Morning, Simon. To you and your listeners, thanks for having me on your show. For us, bridging funding gives sellers and realtors early access to funds before a property transfer is formally registered. Sellers, often caught off guard, must settle costs like sort of municipal rates, levies, compliance certificates up front. Yet many don't have access to these necessary funds. The impact of that, it causes timing gaps, places pressure on everyone involved in the transaction, including the transferring attorney. And if unpaid, can delay or derail the deal. For the realtors, who often have to wait weeks or months for their commission, This creates a cash flow gap that can limit their ability to cover marketing or agency costs and even living expenses. So what bridging funding does, it fills that gap to keep the deals moving.
Yeah, that was right. I sold a property late last year, and I, as the seller, thought there was no onus on me, but there was, as you say, compliance certificates, city power, all of those sort of things suddenly came along and whipped money out of my account. You've now stepped in. You're doing bridging finance. This is a concept that exists, but you're launching a digital first platform, which therefore looks to, I suppose, if it's digital, both offer simplicity and speed for the process.
Absolutely, Simon. So, you know, traditionally, the bridging funding market exists, and thank you for your example, because that's exactly what we're about, is to take that sort of fright out of the transaction. And traditionally, largely it's still manual and sort of rigid, and typically involves sort of forms, wet signatures, documentations, and sometimes even credit vetting. Between the agent, seller, and attorney and funder to put this together. That causes delays, uncertainty, margins forever, and all of those aspects. And for attorneys, operational pressure, sellers cash-strapped, and agents are sort of left waiting and wanting for commission. So this is exactly where, and these are the kind of inefficiencies that Transbridge is built to solve. So to your question, and I think, Simon, this is really where I get excited. So Transbridge is a next generation prop tech and fintech solution that sort of digitizes this long and manual and so slow process that we sort of experience and used to. And what we've done is developed a secure cloud-based platform, accessible via app or web, and that actually connects your sellers, your realtors, your attorneys in one integrated ecosystem. And each have got a customized journey so that everyone can understand that. A little bit of the tech side of it, sort of AI-powered vetting, which assesses your applications real time, once approved, funds are distributed to secure transaction-based wallet within 24 hours. And then what we've embedded as well is a security element through your fintech infrastructure like bank verification APIs, your secure payment rails via onboarded partners, and a wallet-to-trust disbursement. So what does this mean? Attorneys benefit from less paperwork and more control, and your sellers and agents gain fast, transparent access to liquidity without admin delays. What we're trying to do is sort of consolidate funding, compliance, and transaction in one seamless real-time system, and we're calling this Future Funding Now.
I see your point, because particularly, and again, from my experience last year, there is a point where everything's confirmed. The bank finance has been confirmed. Everything is there. There's legal documents, but there's still that process which takes time. And essentially, you step in and say, this is all going to play out and everyone will be paid, but it's going to happen, I don't know, weeks, maybe months down the line. You can expedite that, and particularly maybe also for the realtor who can get some of their commission, as you point out, rather than gaps. It's just saying this whole transaction is going to conclude. Let's kind of speed up some of that flow of cash.
Absolutely, Simon. So what Transbridge then does, it unlocks this and releases funds already secured in a property transaction, as you mentioned. By the time that we step in, the deal's done. All your suspensive conditions are met. The funds are there. It's really just where a seller needs to pay rates and taxes, or a realtor is wanting to access commission, and we advance those funds pre-transfer to keep the deal moving.
Gotcha. We'll leave that there. That is Michael Lentz, CEO of Transbridge. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Gary Boyson yesterday. He, of course, from Rand Swiss. Talking around MTN, the stock was up. It's up about a third so far this year. We've also had Ghana, Nigeria, Rwanda results coming through, which give us some color to it. He likes it. He says it is a unique stock for South Africans. We asked you if you held it. Over half said no telcos for you. The rest was split between loving it and preferring others. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, a new way to do lisps.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.